Welcome to the Whiskey and Wisdom Podcast, coming to you from the Cargo District Recording Studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, where we discuss the most fascinating topics of life. I'm Tyler Yaw with my co-host, Chris Kelly, and each week we interview a special guest to learn how they acquired their wisdom over a glass of whiskey. So sit back, pour yourself a glass, and enjoy Whiskey and Wisdom.
Welcome back, everybody, to this lovely podcast. This week, we have on Brian Pratt, the beverage director of Flying Machine at Riceville Beach.
That's correct.
He's done some amazing drink combinations over there, and I feel like this week we're going to ask a bunch of questions and learn a little bit about it.
Yeah, whatever. It is what it is. So before we get started and dive into the drink too, the way that I found Brian Pratt is I went to Riceville, the Flying Machine at Riceville Beach. And while I was there, the cocktail menu was second to none when it comes to places you can get a cocktail in Wilmington. And so I asked the bartender, I was like, hey, who came up with this list? And she was like, oh, it's Brian Pratt. And I was like, you think he may be interested in coming on a podcast? And got me your name and number and everything and reached out. And you're like, heck yeah, man. So this is where we are today.
Now we're here, finally.
Yes. Yeah. It took a few times, but we are here now. So that's all that matters.
The world of bar management sometimes is unpredictable.
Oh, yeah. We get that. All right, Chris, but what are we sipping on today?
Because it's early in the morning. You got to start out with something a little different. So this week we picked up a classic with a new twist, Jameson Orange, as most people know, JMO, around the world has a couple different takes on it. There's orange, and then there's a cold brew version. Mm-hmm. I don't drink coffee, as we all know, so we're doing the orange. As you can guess, it has some citrus notes, just a little classic spice. It has some nutty aftertones and a little vanilla. But Tyler suggests this would be a good, if you want a sweeter version of an old-fashioned, or you're lazy and just don't want to buy bitters.
Yeah.
A good version.
We don't have any, maybe.
Yes.
Right.
But yeah, this is what we're sipping on this morning. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Let me know. That's going to stick and fall for sure.
There you go.
Well, if I didn't have to work, I would partake with you guys.
It is very sweet.
Oh, yeah. It's smoother than I expected, though.
Mm-hmm. They definitely have the fruity flavors that are taking over. So the way that we were discussing beforehand, because I have had this once before, is this is a good introductory whiskey to get you into the game, and especially if you want to try an old fashioned for the first time and don't really like the burn of a whiskey. It's a good one to get you started and hopefully build you up.
Get you ready, closer to being ready for a true old fashioned, I guess.
Exactly. Give me mic a little closer.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry.
Yeah. You can move that anywhere you want.
How about that?
How's that sound?
Yes.
Yes, that sounds better.
Okay.
Cool.
Sweet. All right. Well, Brian, I spoke to you a little bit before and everything and kind of got your background. But for everyone else who's listening that wasn't at Flying Machine when I was, give us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got to where you are right now.
Where did it begin? I guess, wow, we have to look way far back. Anyway, I started managing and bartending nightclubs eons ago, I guess 18 years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, as you could expect, that was slinging vodka sodas and whiskey cokes and doing shots of tequila or whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
The same family that I was working for at that time was opening up a restaurant in Charlotte. I like the concept. I like the idea. It was DJs every night of the week, open 7 nights a week, open till 2 a.m., but not, you know, open till whenever.
Right.
The sun came up. So I took that opportunity to make the transition from the nightclub to that restaurant. And there was a lot, you know, this was 15, 16 years ago in Charlotte, so it didn't start out necessarily as a full-fledged cocktail bar. Mm-hmm. It started out like everything else did at that time, much like the club we were slinging.
Yeah.
Bucket sodas and things like that to begin with. But, you know, the evolution of the cocktail scene was starting to take hold in Charlotte. You know, obviously it happened in bigger cities first, but I feel like we were probably some of the first to do it in Charlotte at the time. So yeah. Thankfully we had people on board that were following the culture and traveling to see what was going on in other places and brought that back. And we had a good platform and place to do it. And I guess the rest is history. That was 15 years ago.
Wow.
I've been here for a little over a year. So I guess I was at Soul for 14 years. And I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 of those years, it was a pretty cocktail centric bar.
Yeah.
Nice.
Menus changed 4 times a year. Mm. And we're doing some very interesting things and still are. Still keeping an eye on those guys and they're still doing it.
That's neat. So what brought you here to Wilmington then?
I've always wanted to get back here. I spent some time here in my mid-20s, and I've always loved this place. I was looking to sell my home in Charlotte and take the leap of faith somewhere.
Yeah.
And this was number one on my list, really, this or Charleston.
Okay.
And I had worked with a dear friend in the beer and wine business. And she was actually going to be the GM here at Flying Machine. So we had been talking before she even, you know, took the position. And the rest is history. She called and said they were looking for a bar manager. And at first I started consulting on some other things with them. And, you know, I was kind of making the transition from Charlotte to here. And it all kind of lined up. And I took the opportunity. And it's been a lot of fun.
Nice.
That's neat.
It's been a lot of fun.
So what kind of bit you to get you into loving making cocktails?
I guess that doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there was probably a little bit of intimidation years ago, you know, going from being a fast paced bartender to stepping into the cocktail world, you know, there's right. quite a difference in being a bartender and I don't know what you want to call.
Yeah.
I don't want to know what you want to call the evolution of, you know, becoming a bartender is, I don't know. I hear a lot of words, but I don't choose to use those. I don't know, man. I guess you have to be into it and you have to care and you have to be willing to put in the work for it, you know?
Right.
I mean, there's definitely some time and energy and work and the love of the craft that has to go into it
because, certainly.
You know, you never stop learning. And as soon as you feel like you can stop, somebody else is going to.
Yeah.
You really have to continue to evolve with a lot of other things. I mean, if it's the wine world or the beer industry or whatever, it's the same way.
Yeah.
There's always somebody pushing the envelope and taking it one step further or doing, you know, something that wasn't done yesterday. So I think that's what's fun about it. It's, you know, it's ever evolving and ever changing. And, you know, I'm not caught up into one aspect of it. I really like the tools and the gadgets and there's a lot of things that are coming out every year that a lot of people don't know about, you know, whether it's Jameson Orange or, you know, a new cocktail toy behind the bar
that's cool
that maybe not everybody has, or, you know, a machine that prints on top of cocktails or blows balloons on top of, you know, all the shit.
I saw that too. I was like, that's next level stuff. Well,
it's fun. If it gets people interacting and, you know, makes somebody's day, then I guess.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's funny that little things like that can make somebody's evening. So,
yeah, I guess it's everything that can make it Instagram worthy, I guess you could say, right?
All press is good press.
Yes. Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I love to have people come to the bar and, you know, maybe show up in a foul mood or not really knowing what they're getting into or, you know, not knowing what to expect and then show them a really good time and have them leaving with smiles and maybe a little buzz. I don't know. Whatever it takes to make people's day and to make it a little better, I guess that's what we're here for at the end of the day.
That's cool.
Therapy. Or
yeah. Yeah, I'm sure being behind the bar, it's pretty much being a therapist. Oh, yeah.
A little bit of that. It goes both ways sometimes, too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I will say you do your menu of beverages is amazing because I've been to a bunch of different restaurants and just tried, like, a little bit of everything. Yesterday, I had your fancy-fied Bloody Mary.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, you did. I remember that, actually.
Yes. And all of my friends just looked at me like, what? I'm like, well, I get a Bloody Mary or a mimosa everywhere. So they're all similarly flavored. But you did, I don't know, it was just
Philly cheesesteak on top?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought everybody was doing that now.
Well, it's cool because every week you do something different.
Yes.
And I was in that Philly cheesesteak. Well,
let's say we do something different. That's not me. Those ideas, if I didn't have a whole team of people thinking about that, thank you, Molly, that wouldn't happen. But you know, there's sometimes I get stuck on those. It's like, oh, what haven't we done?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but that was just so cool. And it was just clean because, I mean, sometimes you get a Bloody Mary and it's just very, like, thick and just.
Well, there's plenty of vodka in yours.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, well, I know I'm feeling good today. Good
morning. That was a really cool thing too, because like you go to pretty much any bar and it's like, oh, we have a small version of like, or a different version of like an old fashioned or Manhattan or the typical things that you see. But the menu that you have over there is completely different. So you even have the ones, my two favorite are the duck washed bourbon and then also the coconut washed. So I had never even seen that before or even what it meant to have a different wash to it.
Yeah, those are fun. People seem to love those. So we started it, I guess on the last menu, we did a bone marrow washed old fashioned. Mm-hmm. And I kind of was excited about it before we got started. I really felt like it was going to be cool and people would like it.
Yeah.
And I knew that, well, I didn't think that anybody else down here had done that yet.
So. Yeah.
A matter of fact, I really haven't seen the bone marrow wash anywhere. So I was hoping that, you know, I wasn't late to the game with that. I had done it before with a dear friend at an event for, what was the event? It was at Daniel Stowe Garden. And it was basically a convention in Charlotte where the meat industry from all over the country their annual meat meeting. I don't know because we didn't go to that. But then they bust them out to Daniel Stowe Gardens and there was like, four big tour buses with all these people from around the country that maybe they were, you know, maybe they raised cattle or maybe, you know, just somehow in the meat industry. And then at Daniel Stowe Garden, all the like local chefs from the area were set up and basically it was like a meet and greet and they could just walk through and have drinks and try food. And it was really cool. There's a lot of great chefs there. And we were asked to present a cocktail and talk about it on the bus ride.
Okay.
So they picked four or five bartenders from Charlotte. You each got a bus and then,
You
had to make a cocktail and talk about it and you know, have to do it on the bus and present it and all that. So we did the bone marrow. It was a version of an old fashioned. And I think we used like a rose bloom in it. And it was cool. It was blood and bloom or something like that. So I knew that it would work and, you know, conceptually. So we did it on this past menu and people loved it. But I didn't want to carry that into the summer menu because it was a little heavy. I mean, it was delicious in the winter and it would be delicious now, but I just wanted to lighten it up. So I started looking at options and alternatives and, you know, there's a lot of fishermen and duck hunters and I get to see them across the bar. And I was like, you know, there's a lot of duck hunters that come in here. So I started, you know, exploring duck fat and I found organic duck fat and I was like, I bet this would be good. And tried it.
Oh, wow.
It took a few attempts to get it kind of, you know. The bone marrow was really easy because I'd done that one before, so I had a little practice round, but this one was a little trickier. And then working with the syrup, trying to find something that kind of plays well with it was a little bit of a challenge. A lot easier than the bone marrow for whatever reason. But anyway, it worked out. People like it, and we're doing that at least until the fall menu starts. So
Then
we'll switch it up and do something else. But.
Yeah. So is a lot of it just trial and error, just kind of you thinking like, oh, this flavor might taste good with this flavor and just going for it?
There's a couple months of my life, usually right before a menu like is launched, that there's a lot of drinking early mornings.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll go in and have the whole place to myself and have the whole place a mess. Working on four or five different syrups at one time to see which one's better. So a lot of tasting and trial and error. And then after I get it to a certain point, I let other people try it and see what they think. And then it just kind of keeps, tweak it for another 2 or 3 weeks. Sometimes things are kind of like the Jay-Z, I guess. You can, you know, one take it. But that's just right. I think the Rye Conolola was actually one take. I thought about it for probably a month or so. And then I went in one morning, probably like a Monday morning after busy all weekend. I was like, all right, I've been thinking about this for 2 or 3 weeks. And I set everything out on the bar top and there was literally like 10 ingredients. I was like, all right, cool. We went, you know, I did it and I was like, okay. And I might've tweaked, you know, one little thing.
Sure. Yeah.
That's how it happens, man. The other one that you talk about, and that's super popular on this menu and probably one of my favorites, the Monkey Fist.
Yeah.
That one took a little while. I wanted to get the coconut wash. That was a little tougher because if you just use coconut oil and the bourbon, it's not very sweet.
Okay,
and, I can see. You know, you can put the banana liqueur and the other elements into the cocktail. So I was trying a lot of different things to get the sweetness kind of to come out in that cocktail because I thought it needed to be a little sweet anyway and balance at the same time, obviously. And I forget who I was talking to, but they mentioned, and I didn't think about it because we've used so much of this Coco Lopez, and I just didn't. it didn't really come across for one reason, you know, for whatever reason, I didn't think about it, but that was the magic ingredient. Like we do a coconut wash with that bourbon and then we add a little Coco Lopez to that wash.
Okay.
And then all that gets strained out, but it leaves some of the sweetness from the Coco Lopez and it's still coconut.
Yeah.
So
the other thing that I think is pretty neat too is you have taps of your cocktails as well.
We do.
So that's something that I never seen before going to Flying Machine as well. So how does that work by putting it kind of all together like that?
I guess what it allows you to do is to make really eccentric cocktails quick.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of treat it like a chef would treat prepping in the kitchen. Okay. So we usually build those during the day or on a prep day or, you know, before a shift. So we can build 5 gallons at a time.
Oh, wow.
And it's really nice when you're busy, but it's also really nice for the consistency because after I write the instructions down for a keg, then they're always built the same way every time. So you're going to get the same Paloma this week that you got last week and that you got before instead of 5 different bartenders making it the way they think's best, which is also fine.
Right.
But I think consistency with, you know, at least the things that we have on is our 4 choices. Yeah. And 2 of them happen to be our 2 of our more popular cocktails. I wouldn't say the most popular, but unfortunately, people still love mules. One of them is our cucumber mule. And I thought one day we might be talking about another cocktail, but people still love mules. So it's still extremely popular. And it is refreshing and delicious. So I get it. We built that without using ginger beer. And I think by doing it in a 5 gallon format like that, you know, it allows us, we juice 2 pounds of ginger. You know, I guess you could build it on the fly, but it wouldn't be as good. I mean, we kind of build and marry those things and they marinate a little bit. And then we force carbonate it and let it sit with some CO2 pressure on it to kind of carbonate the, I mean, you could put clubs in it, but we typically use water and then it force carbonates it over time.
Oh, that's interesting.
It allows us not to use ginger beer. There's a lot of ginger beers that are great, I'm sure, but I don't think anything's as tasty as fresh juice ginger.
Right.
So everything that goes into those kegs is fresh.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people, you know, see it coming out of a tap and they're like, oh, that's in a keg. I'm like, yeah, but we put it in a keg like 4 hours ago. And the right kind of low is also on tap. And if I didn't have that cocktail on tap, I probably wouldn't have any bartenders that work for me because it was literally a 10 touch cocktail. And
wow.
Yeah. It's cool the first 2 times you make it, but you know,
yeah.
On Saturday night, if you're getting 6 tickets and you've got 4 of those to build, you're just, I mean, I wouldn't like it either. So we put that one on tap. And then there's a Bloodline, which is a spicy tequila cocktail with some really interesting ingredients. A tequila, mezcal, sangrita, not to be confused with sangria, chili liqueur, lemon lime, 3 pepper simple. So it was another one that had a lot of touches and it was really popular. So we decided to put that on tap. Of course, the Paloma and the Mule.
Right.
2 of the more complicated cocktails that have a lot of touch. So trying to, you know, I think part of at least how I think about bar and service, we talked about this earlier. It's not just one aspect of this, but flow behind the bar is extremely important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are some changes that could be made in any bar for that. I think, you know, a lot of times 2 years into the game, you're kind of realizing or a year later that you could tweak some things that maybe aren't as easy to tweak as they would have been when you were building the place out. And sometimes we're constricted from, you know, what health department dictates as well. There's a, you know, when we were designing this bar, we had to have 3 sinks for some reason. So part of the design got squashed because the health department wanted a sink, but another sink, even though there were 2, but yeah.
It's not that large of a bar either.
I know. Exactly. That's what we said. But anyway, we have to make them happy. So that's what we did. And part of the design got changed, but flow behind the bar is important. And when you're doing a lot of cocktails and, you know, you have one of those nights that you're doing 400 or 500 cocktails, it's nice to have things streamlined.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you have a few tap cocktails, it really helps service and helps move things forward and allows you to take very good care of the guests that are sitting at the bar, which is super important.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking about tapped cocktails, another reason why we brought you on too is because last week we had on Connor Barth with Blue Shark Vodka. And that's another one that you have on tap too right now, right?
We do. We're using those guys in our Cucumber Mule.
That was pretty good too. I did try that. Yeah. It's a perfect summer day, like hot summer day. Like if I could just take like a gallon of that to the beach, like that would be.
Yes.
Not all for myself. But not all for myself to share with all my friends. That's
right. Yeah, that one's fun. And, you know, it's great to, you know, a lot of the cocktails that are on the list, we think about people coming off the beach because we get a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, they're coming in for lunch or dinner after being in the sun all day. And sometimes you want a refreshing crusher, and that's definitely.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you for our sponsor, the Leland Brewing Company, right over the bridge in Leland Township. Definitely check them out. It's a nice local spot with local beers that they're making on site, as well as some that aren't from the area. It is an amazing family-friendly location, and it's really nice. They got some greenery out back, as well as some nice food trucks that pop up every now and then. So give them a check out. Tell them that Whiskey and Wisdom sent you.
Yeah. And so how did Connor find you for the competition that you're in using North Carolina ingredients?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I guess they just started coming in from the very beginning because we were new to the island, and we carried Blue Shark, obviously. But those guys came in a lot and had a lot of cocktails, and I guess I was good enough to represent them. I don't, you know, I'm definitely passionate about things. And funny, the day that they asked me to do it, I was just talking about how uninspired by vodka I am, and then they came in the next day to ask me for a cocktail with vodka for a competition. I was like, oh god, I have to do this because I was, you know, sometimes you just. Not that there's anything wrong with vodka at all. And I do drink vodka. It's just, you know, it's in the world of mixology, dare I say, sometimes that one kind of gets left out a little bit, you know, right. I mean, for whatever reason, you know, people are excited about bourbon and people are excited about gin and, you know, it's a little more complex and a little, but there are a lot of vodka drinkers out there, so we can't forget those folks. And it's been a lot of fun, man.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm kind of glad it was vodka now because it's forced me to kind of get out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, I was going to say, did it kind of re-inspire you to kind of see all of the different things that you can do with vodka now?
I mean, I knew that you could do, you know, basically you build everything around the vodka and it kind of just, but definitely it's been good for me. So I'd say it was fun. And I think using, you know, local ingredients was also challenging and, you know, super fun because I, you know, I usually don't think about that a whole lot.
Right.
I mean, I do love using local ingredients, obviously, but it wasn't at the forefront of what we were doing here. You know what I mean?
Right.
So to be forced or not forced, but you know, to score more points from using local ingredients. And it was really fun. So we were able to harvest a lot of things right off the island.
Wow.
I went to the farmer's market that they have on the island one Monday morning, which I guess is the only day they're there. And met some people that had some pretty cool stuff. You know, the honey and honeycomb came from True Value Hardware right off the island. Oh, yeah. So that's also Hanover County honey. So a lot of things were super hyper local, and a few things I used crude bitters. That's a Raleigh company.
Okay.
And that was, everything else was pretty much hyper local. The basil, the watermelon, the honey, the honeycomb, the prickly pear that I shouldn't say this on. But that I borrowed from somebody's yard on the beach. But hopefully, you know, I guess the next competition the final round is August 8th. So,
okay.
There will be a few more things readily available that we're using in that cocktail. So it was hard to get North Carolina watermelon 4 weeks ago. It's hard to find.
Was it really?
Prickly pear it was. I didn't think it was going to be a challenge, and it really was. You see watermelons everywhere, all over these local produce places, but they weren't from North Carolina.
Right, so they bring them in from everywhere else.
They were Georgia, or they were Florida, where the climate was a little warmer.
North Carolina has a weird, like our watermelon season, because I know that they grow it.
Yeah.
But the season here is just so weird. I think partially because of how much rain and how hot we got at one time. Like watermelons were just non-existent.
Wow.
And I think the true, like, our watermelon season is like late July, August.
Yeah.
That sounds about right. Yeah. I've just noticed, like, seeing, like, on the signs, like, where they come from, that it's usually later in the year for some reason,
which is weird. I didn't pay much attention to that until recently. I'm like, oh, this is not really from North Carolina, even though that, you know, it's at this local produce place.
Right.
So as a person who knows a little about a few things, what is this competition you were in?
So it's the NCLRA Chef Showdown, and it's presented by Got to Be North Carolina Agriculture. It's hard to say it that way, but that's what it is. So it's a culinary and cocktail competition that they do once a year with North Carolina bartenders and chefs competing for the final round, which is August 8th.
Wow.
And you know, there's elimination rounds, and I believe all the chefs are kind of on the same format as the bartenders with using as much local North Carolina produce. And obviously all the bartenders are competing with North Carolina spirits and as many North Carolina ingredients as they can. So
that's cool.
Pretty fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun actually, but
yeah, it reminds me because we were talking a couple of weeks ago about Top Chef and how I just like that show in general because they have to come up with stuff on the fly. And half the time, like, hey, you know, here's a table of ingredients. You have to use the stuff on here and use as much as you can. And I just never understand, like, how do you have that inspiration? And I'm like, it has to be like one of those things that you learn over time.
That's interesting. I've been getting more into cooking myself, so I haven't challenged myself like that. Right. But, I mean, I guess in the cocktail
world. I wasn't saying the cocktail world, very similar.
Yeah, that would be scary and difficult. It was interesting for the competition. I was like, yeah, I'm ready to do this. And then all of a sudden you have like four judges and three other people and two cameras in your face. And I think it's going to be worse than that on this next round. But I was just like, oh shit. And I was the first one there too. Oh. And I'd had like 15 cold brews. I had to drive up in the morning. So I left early in the morning. I was drinking coffee the whole way and I didn't eat breakfast. And I got there and I was like, all right, I'm ready. And then I'm trying to hold the jigger. I'm like, but hopefully now that I've seen kind of what to expect, won't be as difficult maybe.
Right. Yeah.
I made it through the first round. So now I feel like I'm a little more seasoned maybe.
Yeah. It sounds like they really liked it the first round though. So that has to be a good inspiration.
I hope so, man.
Yeah.
Humbled.
So since this comes out after the competition, can you tell us what your drink was?
Oh, sure. I mean, we can definitely talk about that. I think they actually posted it on the Flying Machine Instagram. So.
Oh, okay.
It was obviously Blue Shark Vodka, local honeycomb, local bee pollen, local honey, local watermelon, Flying Machine grown basil, prickly pear from Wrightsville Beach, crude bitters. I used the habanero mango pecan bitters, local sea salt from Beach. There's a For the Love of Sea Salt Company or For the Love of Salt Company off Wrightsville Beach.
Yeah.
It's actually like a solar cured salt.
Interesting.
Really good. They do citrus salt, so I use the citrus salt. And did I say prickly pear?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Crude bitters. So, yeah. Key lime was the only thing that wasn't local. So I have to source a citrus in North Carolina before the next event because I want to keep it all in North Carolina. Yeah. But that wasn't a possibility last time.
Key lime is just – it's. I always see it around in summertime, and I'm like, I never actually know what it is except that it's in pies.
Yes. It's limier.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I use key lime because the first time I made it, I had some key limes. And I guess, you know, you see lime all the time.
Mm-hmm. And you don't know where it comes from.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I tried key lime. I liked the way it worked. And I don't know. It read a little better too.
Yeah. That's nice. So do you have to make essentially the same cocktail that you made before?
So we did two cocktails and they choose one for you to move
forward. Okay.
So. Yeah.
So what was the other cocktail?
It was fun. It was obviously Blue Shark and it was a cordial made with blueberries and like a white whiskey from North Carolina.
Mm.
And then we did like a little scoop of goat cheese with it. So it was kind of like a dessert cocktail.
Yeah.
Very boozy. I think you guys would probably enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was listening, that sounds so good.
Like a bourbon love. I don't know. Because of the white mash blueberry cordial that we built, it was delicious, but it was very boozy. And
yeah.
Sounds very fall oriented.
Yeah. It was a good friend of mine, Hunter, helped me with that one. He was, you know, you get to pick somebody to work with to pick an assistant.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey man, you lead one of the cocktails. I'll lead the other and we'll just help each other.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize until we got there that you really weren't supposed to do it that way. So, he's a good friend. And I was like, look, he's put a lot of work into this. So he's going to be the one that makes this cocktail. And they didn't love that, but mm-hmm. You know, you're only as good as your team. Nobody can do this alone. And I don't know. I didn't want to take the spotlight. Mm-hmm.
And that's a good man, though.
Well, I thought it was doing the right thing. Right. So anyway, it was a great cocktail. They really enjoyed it, but they chose this one probably because it was, you know, there were some things in that cocktail that you know, wasn't 100% North Carolina. I don't know why they chose one over the other, but.
Yeah. They did, so. Yeah. So you think that one might make the fall list for Flying Machine?
Something like that, maybe. Yeah. I'm trying not to think about that yet.
Even, a little too far away.
I've been thinking about that.
Yeah,
that's I'll really start thinking about that in August.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Because you switch over October?
We'll switch over in probably November this year.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
The joy.
Yeah, it'll be fun though.
Yeah.
Maybe a little smaller.
Right. It's a huge menu. That was another thing that I was really impressed with too, because for as craft cocktail as you can be, that whole menu was it.
It wasn't supposed to be that large. And it always starts off as a much smaller concept and then grows, and everybody, you know, the folks that I work with have been cool enough to let me spin. I'm like, it's only going to be 20 cocktails, I swear. And then it's like 22, but then it's got to be an even number. So it's, you know, it's 24. But anyway, that cocktail menu was, you know, for the first time, it was something that was really fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is really our first year. So we opened last year in August. So it's kind of trying, you know, getting more of the algorithm of how people drink here and like what people get excited about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little different than what I'm used to in Charlotte. So, and I've always wanted to do a fun menu, kind of take the pretentiousness out of it. Maybe a sprinkle of pretentiousness, but more fun than pretentious. And, you know, I think that being on the island and being on Wrightsville Beach is a perfect platform for that, because, you know, people are on vacation, they're having fun. Mm-hmm. And even people that live here, you know, they're a little more laid back and, you know,
that's for sure.
little less uptight maybe than the Charlotte banking community. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, city life in general. But yeah, I wanted to do something really fun. And I can't tell you how many times people have sat down and looked over the menu and said, wow, this is really fun. And I'm like,
yeah,
mission accomplished.
Yep.
All of my friends were excited because I just texted them like, hey, we're getting brunch at Flying Machine. And they're like, well, first, I didn't know they had brunch.
And, <do.
laughs> yeah. And then they were scrolling through and every single one was like, man, I'm so hype. Like just excited just to see the menu because it's different. Cause I mean, we do brunch like once a month and we just pick different places, but I saw your menu and I was like, oh, this is different.
Different.
It's mm-hmm. not the basic, oh, hey, you know, let's get a mimosa. Let's get a bloody.
Well, we still have those.
Yes. Right. But you added on to that. And that was what got me excited. And then I saw the food and then I was like, okay, I can deal with that too.
Awesome. Yeah. Mission accomplished.
Exactly.
And we'll continue to evolve in both of those areas, I think.
Yeah.
I don't feel like the brunch cocktail menu is exactly where it needs to be yet, but.
Always good to have places to improve.
That's right. That's right. Yes. We're getting there.
Makes it fun that way too.
Mm-hmm. Always.
What's probably one of the biggest differences that you've seen in Wilmington versus Charlotte when it comes to like you kind of said, like the people are different. And so what they want to drink is different.
I feel that way. I mean, only from experience.
But, right. Yeah.
I mean, I could be wrong, but it seemed to me that when I was at Seoul that we were serving, I don't know. I just feel like gin and bourbon were a lot more ordered than they are here at the beach.
Oh, really?
Obviously we do okay with bourbon and whiskey here, but tequila and vodka always seems to be at the top of the best of the, you know, mm-hmm. for the week or, you know, so anyway, gin is something in Charlotte that I feel like as I travel a lot and try to hit the cool cocktail bars when I'm traveling, I've noticed that, you know, I don't think that we could do a gin bar here in Wilmington, and definitely not Wrightsville Beach, but in Raleigh they can. So,
mm-hmm. and I can see that,
you know what I mean? So I think that just the way people drink is a little different. And is it because, you know, we're an island on the beach? I'm sure that has something to do with it. You know, and it does change, obviously, during the season as well. Like, you know, people are going to drink differently in the fall and winter than they would in the summer, which I guess you can – that's pretty much the case anywhere. I don't know. I mean, I've definitely learned to embrace tequila because people love it here.
I was going to say.
You could have a whole menu full of tequila and people wouldn't complain.
Speaking of. That.
Right. Well, you know. Tequila, vodka seem to be at the forefront of what most people order. And then, you know, whiskey is a little behind that. And you would think that, you know, we have bringing the Hemingway cocktails onto the menu has really helped drive rum sales. And I think making that fun and kind of paying homage to Hemingway and putting 4 rum cocktails on the menu definitely has helped that. But before that, it wasn't like we were, you know, like we were doing a lot of rum. And you would think being on an island, you know, that rum would be a little more.
See, popular. That's what I was thinking too. I'm like, I feel like rum would be a more popular drink.
I think it's coming.
Yeah.
I think it's coming. I hope so anyway.
Yeah. Well, you got to think there's a lot of people moving here and transplanting. And I feel like you seem very ahead of the game and knowledge wise, like where to shift things, and being at the forefront is always the best spot to be, because then that's driving people to try new things.
I hope so.
But yeah. I agree. Tequila, And the problem is that everyone, when I was younger, we would just go get tequila shots, and that's what you knew to get. And so they just kept that vibe. And I'm like, no, you need to get a good, like, mezcal. You need to get something that's like that's good to be mixed. Don't, please. I love Patron on a good day, but please don't have that in every single drink, people. Like, y'all gotta, you gotta step your
unless
game
they're up. Paying you a lot of money to do that. Right. Oh wait, they don't do that.
No,
of course not. So in your professional opinion, since we're talking about tequila now on a whiskey podcast, what do you think about Casamigos?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Love it.
Which is Casamigos?
George Clooney's old brand.
Okay.
He sold for somewhat $1 billion. I don't know.
Yeah. Something
in
like
the billions,
that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. It's great. It's easy to work with. I love it. I love their mezcal. I mean, I love the whole line.
Oh, I don't even think I've had their mezcal.
It's really good.
I got
to try that.
My pop drinks tequila. Like, he's not actually my blood relative.
Right.
He loves him some tequila. He went to Mexico, came back. It was like, so.
Right. I don't have this here.
No.
Right.
Well, and now every time I get him a bottle, I'm like, well, you got to go get a 1942 or something like mad expensive.
Right.
And then I drink on it. I'm like.
You see why?
Mm-hmm.
This is acceptable.
That was a conversation I had with someone else a couple weeks ago. Is he was like, oh yeah, I love tequilas and going on. And I was like, tequila, really? I was like, I don't know. And he was like, no, you're thinking like what you were shooting in college. It was like, that is not the tequila that I'm talking about.
So here. Why did you bring up Casamigos? Why that brand?
I've heard a lot of people talking about it recently.
Like good or bad?
Good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And they're using a lot in more mixed drinks now that I've noticed.
Super clean.
Yeah. Yeah, so when I've been going to other like different cocktail bars just around North Carolina, I see Casamigos in almost every.
I feel like everybody knows the brand. So if it's a good brand that has the recognition, then why not put it on your cocktail menu? Because they're going to see, oh, wow, it's got Casamigos in it. Even if it's $18, I'm like, I know I like that. I'm not going to feel like crap tomorrow. And,
yes. You know. I wasn't sure if it was just like a branding thing or if it was
absolutely a branding thing. Yeah. But it's also good tequila. So
it's a good, combo there. Because there's some whiskeys that are out there that just have very good branding.
Mm-hmm. And there's some tequilas out there that have big names behind it that
really
we'd rather not drink.
No. Right. Exactly.
But absolutely. And I feel like with bourbon and whiskey right now, it's the place to be, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so a lot of people want to put their name on something and it takes time and it takes love and it takes.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Do we have any good North Carolina tequila? I mean,
I don't think we have.
We need that next, right?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we've tried some South Carolina, North Carolina whiskeys, but I can't say I've had one that's blown my mind yet. So they're like, there's some that are okay. There's
still
some
need
that
like
aren't.
5 years.
Yeah. So exactly. Well, yeah. A lot of them
is probably the last one we had from North Carolina because they're right up on the Virginia border. Mm-hmm. And they just dropped one called the Rockfish because I think that's the street that they're on.
Okay.
And that one looks really good. I'm going to have to try that. But you are very right. I've been questioning that. I'm like, how do you get a really good whiskey in North Carolina?
A lot of these places have only been around for 2-3 years. So you're at the very beginning of even calling it whiskey. Yeah. So.
And so that's right. We need 5 more years, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. And I think we'll start to see things. I mean, there's absolutely good gin here. There's absolutely good vodka here. And there's some decent rum. So I feel like it's only a matter of time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I hope so anyway.
If I had the money to just like build a facility and just sit on it for 7 years, I would.
That would be awesome. Yes, it'd be a lot of fun.
It's probably why everyone does gin and vodka and tequila.
Yeah.
Right.
We need to get some money back in the account.
Right. Yeah. I can get this done in a week. Let's go.
Yes, absolutely. And people drink those things.
So. Yes.
Yeah.
So, as a person who works behind a bar and comes up with concepts, I get to ask my random question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about seltzers?
How do I feel about seltzers?
Yeah.
I feel like there's too many people doing them.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, there's a reason for that. I mean, it's an alternative to beer, and I guess it's a less bloating filling option. I don't know. Is that even true? I guess it is.
I guess it kind of is.
I know a lot of old-timers that drank beer their whole life that now we're on seltzers because, oh, man, I can't drink a 12-pack anymore.
Yeah.
Six of these. I don't know. I mean, I guess it probably gained popularity in the female side of things, wouldn't you say?
I think that's kind of
where there's been some crossover from that, but you know, they weren't making prickly pear key lime beer then. I mean, they are now, but
yes,
or it, pineapple.
Seems like it started in the sororities, jumped to the fraternities, and then it just took off like wildfire.
And I also feel like it's cheap and it's fast. Yeah. So, you know, it's a moneymaker. And
yeah,
people,
I mean,
and people drink it. So I guess that's why everybody got on the train. But I mean, who didn't? You know, Budweiser was doing a seltzer.
Yeah.
Corona.
I was going to say Corona was making
Topo Chico does now as well.
I saw that the other day.
I think I have one.
Which makes more sense for Topo Chico to do it than Budweiser. But
Smirnoff has a few of them out there now.
I just think the whole market has gotten extremely watered down with that. So we should be asking ourselves, what's the next big thing?
Yes. Right.
And
yeah.
I think it's those canned cocktails.
So I was going
to bring
that up.
Surface.
I was going to bring that up too, because I think that's a huge opportunity, because so one, End of Days is doing a lot of those right now too. Mm-hmm. And it's one way. So in North Carolina, liquor is controlled by the ABC and it doesn't leave, but these canned cocktails looks like it's about to pierce that and be able to be sold in grocery stores at some time soon. So that would be interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge way for these liquor companies to start getting into grocery stores.
The percentage is actually super low on those cans, right?
Some of them are pretty high. Like you're getting like 9 to 11% on some that I've seen.
Okay, well, the conversation I had last week was supposedly it was less than a double IPA.
Oh,
so we're talking about like.
Six. But this is the thing is like I'm with you. I feel like the canned cocktails will be the next thing, but they have to.
I don't know
out.
If that's going to be the thing. It just something's going to be.
It seems like it. No, yeah.
I just think I'm with you because I've seen a couple other brands like bring them out and they just have to find the right balance to alcohol. Because I tried obviously like the big name like Jack and Coke at one.
Really?
And
I remember seeing that on Instagram or something and I was like, I'm not sure if I can go down that road.
And I was like, and when you do that, then it just starts tasting a little flat. So I think being local to a spot that can make them and getting like a locally sourced canned cocktail will actually be a little bit better because they have that quick, hey, you know, I heard you, this tastes bad. Instead of making like a batch of a million bottles and then coming back and be like, ooh.
Oh, I did see one at the grocery store. I forget who made it though. And it was a mojito. And they had a bunch
of attempts at that. Yeah.
Yeah. There was like a few different types of like mojitos in this like box. And
conceptually, it sounds cool, but
I
haven't tried any of those that I was like, wow, this is actually good. Just like the canned Negronis. Like, I've tried a lot of those, and I've never been impressed by any of that.
Yeah, it just feels like it's missing something. It
feels like it's missing a lot.
Yeah, good point. But the one that I was looking at when I picked up the box, it said 9.7%, and I was like, dang. Like,
wow.
That's boozy. Pretty intense.
Pretty boozy.
Yes.
I don't know. I think that we're seeing the baby bloom of this, and I think the evolution will be hopefully – we'll turn into something cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, also, I mean, cans were kind of, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, when do you drink out of a can?
On the beach.
On the beach, on a boat, when you're hiking, you know, things like that. And do we really need to mix vodka and tequila and
Jack good and point.
With this? I don't know. So I'm sure people are going to do it. I myself do not drink that type of alcohol when I'm out and about.
No, yeah.
Playing sports or on the boat or, but a lot of people do, I guess.
Evidently. Yeah. Not the thing I'd be doing if I'm driving
a
boat.
I'm drinking a boat soda.
Yeah. So the other week we tried Monkey Shoulder, and when we did Monkey Shoulder, it said it is the whiskey for making cocktails.
Oh, wow.
So
that's
have you
branding? I love Monkey Shoulder.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
a blend of what, 4 or 5 single malts?
Yeah.
Did you look at that?
Mm-hmm.
Did you pull that up?
We did before. I don't think we went into it on the podcast, but we looked it up.
All the single malts that are in it, except for one, are very like recognizable, like great brands.
Yeah.
So I think price point, it's hard to beat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've used it for cocktails. I love Monkey Shoulder.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Awesome.
I was just curious because I was like, well, there's no better person to ask than you sitting here.
I mean, Scotch cocktails aren't going to be very popular no matter what, but I try to put one on at least the fall winter menu.
Okay.
And last year, the one that was on the menu did, you know, fairly well.
Oh, yeah.
I did use Scotch and Japanese whiskey together to kind of, if people are scared of Scotch and they see a Japanese whiskey, they might be more inclined to try it, perhaps, was my thought. You know, the We always have a beautiful Scotch shelf. So if you're Scotch drinking, there's always a place for Monkey Shoulder. So that's something that we'll always have.
So you could probably put this in words better than I can. I know I just don't really like Scotch. Is there a way that you can kind of put in words why most people tend to not lean towards Scotch versus like a bourbon?
Absolutely not. I love Scotch. So
really?
I mean, maybe I can understand, you know, the Islay regions. There's a lot of Scotches that get compared to like hospital bed Band-Aid flavors. Have you ever heard that?
I haven't heard
that.
It's
kind of a thing in the Scotch world, like, you know, that, you know, some of the Ardbeg and things of that nature, the extremely peated smoky Scotches, right, where they, you know, I could see how that could be an acquired taste, although I appreciate them. But like the single malts and the Monkey Shoulder, I don't really understand why, what about it scares people away personally. But, you know, I've also been drinking Scotch a long time, probably longer than I should have. Usually that's something you find that people kind of get to at a much later stage in life. But I like to see, you know, 20-something-year-olds that enjoy Scotch, and it happens. But maybe you're just not trying the right one. Maybe you need to come in and we'll do a Scotch tasting.
Yeah, we'll do that.
We'll start with, like, the Caribbean cast, like the Balvenie Caribbean cast.
Oh, okay.
I think that's, like, a nice entry level to maybe someone who doesn't know much about Scotch, but wants to get into it.
I think you bring up a good point with that, because I don't really like the strong peaty flavor that you get in a lot of them. And I think that's really what the turnoff was.
I think so,
for
if
me.
Anything, it's definitely a little more acquired, but it's the same as Mezcal.
Like, I was going to say, which is weird though, because I like Mezcal. So I don't know why I like it in Mezcal, but I don't like these like peaty flavor.
Yeah. It's a different smoky, but it is similar.
That's
interesting. I wish I could put that into words.
I'll just have to sit more time on the other side of the bar with you. And
we'll probably just need to drink more Scotch.
Yeah.
But that's the same with whiskey. Like, for the longest time, the only whiskey I had was Crown and JMO.
Right.
And I'm like.
And there's nothing wrong with either one of those things. There's a reason that they do as well as they do, because they're consistent and they're good.
Yeah.
But as I got older, after I drank them, I had the worst hangover.
Right.
And now I'm like, you know, let's transition to something a little bit, lack of a better word, better.
There's better than Jameson?
What? Yeah, right.
But it's just nice to try something. And that's part of the reason why I hopped on the podcast, is because I like trying new whiskey just to see like what I will like and what I would taste. Because I know if my flavor palette is like, this is all I had as a kid, you got to have somebody else to tell you like what's something that you could potentially like in the future.
Mm-hmm.
How to transition from that cheap, you know, bottle that you just down before you go out to the club to something that you can
elevating
actually
that a little bit.
Yeah.
I think my first experience with the love of Scotch was probably, I realized that I didn't get hangovers with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, drinking the way that I drink when I'm drinking, it's nice to be able to drink something.
Right. Yeah.
And I also stayed away from the bottom of the barrel with Scotch. I was privileged to be around people who were much more educated and had been drinking Scotch much longer than I have. So I started near the top instead of with Sheep Dip or Johnny Walker Red or one of those that I can't recommend.
Yeah.
Oh, I shouldn't say that on here.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Nobody's going to come at us from Sheep Dip, trust me.
No, I'm sure not. So I feel like I'd be missing out if I didn't ask what your favorite one whiskey and two just spirit in general is, specifically.
That changes so much. My favorite whiskey, Nika Coffee Grain.
So, yeah.
I mean, right now, it could change next year.
Right.
That's still at the top of my list. Probably, you know, when you look at price point, and it's probably a little bit of an underdog, it doesn't have the reputation that a Woodford or a Buffalo Trace or so many more might have.
Yeah.
I love Japanese whiskey. I really do. So, and when I found that, I turn people onto that probably every week. And I still
get. You did to me too a week ago.
People usually feel the same way I do about it after trying it. And there's a lot of great whiskey. And, you know, I could put, you know, it's hard to put one thing.
To
fill that blank with just one thing. But if I had to right now, this week or this month, it would be the Nika Coffee Grain Japanese whiskey. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I saw that sitting up there too. And I've seen it in ABC stores just out and about as well. And I'm like, oh, like Japanese coffee, like Japanese. I love Japanese whiskey. And then I was like, oh, coffee. I love coffee. And I just never picked the bottle
and
up.
And it's not like super coffee.
I think it's not at all.
The distillation process, yeah. But it's not like, I don't really get a lot of coffee. Mm-mm. Caramel notes and some.
Yeah. You don't really get a coffee flavor mm-hmm. from it at all personally. But yeah, when I tried it, I was like, this is probably one of my favorite whiskeys now.
Yeah. And we had the High West Midwinter's Dram in.
Oh yeah. That sounds good. So good. Everyone's talked so much about that.
Oh my God, it was so good. And it was so easy to sell because you just like pour somebody the tiniest amount. And it was that good.
Yeah.
Like you're like, okay, yes, please.
Yeah. And well, and that's what
kind of sold itself and it was delicious. I wish I had more of that.
Yeah.
We had Chris Lecoe on and he loves High West mm-hmm. and he got us great the Boo Rye.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh.
They're doing great things.
Yeah. I almost want to go out there just to visit the distillery.
That Whistle Pig 6 year is fun for just like a bulk drinker too, if, you know.
If you're, oh, okay.
Yeah, if you're.
The 6 year.
Yeah, you got to try that on the rocks. Just, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not going to blow your mind, but it's just a good everyday, like, you know, bulk drinker is what we call that.
Yeah. Honestly, I would have that over the like the Boss Hog though.
Yeah,
like for
I would too because the Boss Hog $600 a bottle.
Yeah, so like if you put the flavor versus like price.
Oh, that's
a, like yeah, that's how it's I make so up easy. Mind. Yeah, I'm like gosh. it's and not worth the $600.
You know,
yeah.
Nika at $80 a bottle is probably actually cheaper than that for some people, but you know, for mm-hmm. an $80 bottle of bourbon, I feel like it stands
right.
You know, with things much more expensive than that.
Yeah.
What else? Probably the Graywell Gin. I don't know if you guys have seen that yet. Mm-mm. I'm new to this area, but it's from somewhere in California. They use sea kelp and almond in the distillation. And obviously it's a gin, but yeah, I wanted to do something cool with that for the fall menu. I'm really excited to work with it. It's probably one of the better gins I've tried in a long time.
Yeah.
Super interesting. And I, you know, being here on the coast, I've always wanted to do a weird briny sea something cocktail
that'd be with cool,
seaweed
yeah.
and salty and cool. And
yeah.
I'm going to do that on this next menu. So that will be the gin we use, the Gray Whale, which is delicious. And every now and then we'll get gin lovers in and I love to bring down the bottles of my favorite gin right now and kind of taste them on things. And most of the time they haven't heard of that one. So
yeah,
that one's cool.
My first introduction to gin was Bombay Sapphire.
Yeah.
And
nothing wrong with that.
It was interesting. And then after I tried that, I was like, okay, I guess I don't like gin. that was it. And then finally someone
don't
was
shut
like,
the door yet.
Right. Yeah. And then finally I had a good friend of mine who's a big gin drinker and he has like a small collection of gin. And he was like, you need to try a few of these.
Right.
And I was like, oh, my mind has been open. Yeah. I was like, okay, I'll open that door back up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many great gins and there's actually some really good gins coming out of North Carolina, which is cool to see.
Yeah. So what you were saying earlier too, like I do think the gin world is starting to come here to Wilmington
I'm
as well
so
too.
Thankful for that.
Yeah. Cause I have friends that like from PA that are up near like New York and Philly and then some that are out West and they've been going to these gin bars for the past 2 and 3 years. I'm like, why in the hell would you have a gin bar? But now with Wilmington being a few years behind, I'm like, okay. It makes sense now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a cool gin bar in Raleigh, and I can't for the life of me remember the name of it right now. And they do have, you know, one bottle of tequila and maybe one bourbon or whiskey. And they had a lot of Amaros, too, so that
was... Oh, yeah.
We need to open an Amaro bar. That's the next big thing.
Amaro? What is that?
Oh, we could go down that road. We'll save that for the next podcast.
Okay. Right.
No, I'm kidding. I'm not opening a Amaro bar. But I think that it's cool to see that people are starting to embrace that a little more here, too. And
right. You
see it on the shelves. And, you know, unfortunately, here in Wilmington, there's only a few that we can get our hands on without a special order. I'm definitely seeing it used in more cocktail builds and seeing it on the shelves more. So I guess Fernet kind of started that whole thing. But there's so many more options other than Fernet out there. They're wonderful and delicious. So. We'll bring those back on the fall menu.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm excited to see this fall menu.
Yeah,
now we're talking about it.
Me too. So I'm excited to see it.
Right. Is there a lot more
I
work?
Really,
I'm sure.
Really appreciate it when it's when it's in print.
We'll do a travel. We'll come over there and sit down at the bar and try out some of the random things on the menu.
Sounds awesome. We'd love to have you.
That would be fun.
He does it like once a week.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry,
that's okay.
Get you in trouble?
Nah. My wife knows I'm there every week, so it's fine.
It's just far enough from work.
Honey, I'm at the surf shop, for real.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I'm like, I always want to go on lunch break, but I'm like, I know if I leave, I'm going to get caught at the bridge.
Yes.
And then I'm gonna get, they're like, Chris, why are you?
Especially if you're in a hurry, you're definitely going to get caught.
Yeah, every time.
If you've got anywhere to be at any certain time, you're going to get caught at the bridge.
I'm like, it's supposed to go up on the hour, not 10 minutes after.
Yeah, it goes up when it goes
story
up.
Story of my life.
Yep. Well, now that we've hit an hour on here already, I have one last.
You're right. It does fly.
It flies, right? I have one last question for you.
Yeah, man.
If you could tell your younger self one thing, what would it be? Hit you with a big one at the end.
Invest in Apple. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would have said invest in Bitcoin, but that would have been a.
If you sold at the high.
Yeah, right. Oh, God. So many things. One thing. Yeah, I don't know, man. Live your life to the fullest.
Yeah, that one's great.
Don't get caught up in the rat race. Do what you love every day.
That's awesome.
And it probably, you know, maybe it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah. Is that how you feel when you go to work most days?
Yes,
or?
Every day.
That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything that I'm doing now, I enjoy. And that's, you know, there's something to be said for that, I hope.
Certainly.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Smiling people at the bar having delicious cocktails definitely makes me happy.
Right. And I'm sure working at Flying Machine is nice too, because it's probably not like the college bars or the clubs.
Surrounded by water. It's horrible there.
Right.
No, it's been a really great place. And I always dreamed of, you know, working in a bar surrounded by water. I honestly thought I was going to be on a boat or somewhere in the Keys or something, but it's pretty damn close. It feels great. And the people are awesome. And, you know, we get people in every day that, you know, that haven't been there or experienced it yet. So it's still a lot of fun. So as long as it's fun and we keep, you know, up with the innovation and keep getting people through the door, then I'm going to be there.
So you're going to be out on the boat tomorrow on your day off?
Well, I always pay attention to what it's going to look like. So
right. Yeah.
I know that also plays into factor on whether I can come on podcast. I'm like, I don't know. Next Tuesday's looking pretty flat out there. And, you know, even you would think living at the beach that you would get more time to do those things, but you also have to pay close attention to the weather and be smart and safe out there. So when it lines up, I go, and when it doesn't, I find something else to do. And there's plenty of work in the bar right now. So. I will be doing a maintenance day tomorrow, sir.
Oh, yeah. Sounds good.
The weather looks bad.
Yeah, I know, right? I know. We need more rain, right? Holy
cow. Oh, I know. We've been getting torrential downpoured here the last
hopefully
week.
Hopefully we needed it, but it's time to move on.
I know.
Give me like 3 weeks of no rain you give me a little bit more.
A weekend of no rain would be great.
Right, at least that.
But because we're at the end, we want to get you some shout outs so people can come see you.
Absolutely.
Where can they find you on social media?
Oh, let me see what it is now. Sorry, I'm not much on my social media game, but Be In The Flow. So B.InTheFlow is my Instagram.
Okay. Perfect.
You know, I'm not super attached to that, but
it'll change eventually, but
everybody says that. You know, I get in my little spurts and I do post cocktails and I do post kind of what's going on every now and then in my life, but I definitely don't live in the phone or by social media. I'm usually pretty busy doing things. If I'm not behind the bar, I'm doing something.
Right. Definitely follow the Flying Machine and Flying Machine Rightsful Beach Instagram, though, because they do post quite often.
They post a lot more than I do, yes. And I'm sorry that I didn't mention that, but
that's okay.
Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, that's how I learned about all of the new food and everything that's coming there. And I saw the cheesesteak that was featured the other day on there, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go try it.
Oh, yes, and that was delicious.
Yes.
And we have those every day at lunch, so you can come get that anytime. Well, a much larger version.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, my friends were like, is that like an appetizer on a cocktail? Is that a...
No, it's a... Damn near a full meal on a Bloody Mary. Wow. And those have been fun, man. People, I think they come in, some people come in for, you know, on Sunday brunch just to see what the Bloody Mary of the week's going to be. So
that's cool.
Definitely worked out for us.
Yes.
And it's fun. We keep thinking that we've outdone ourselves, and then Molly comes up with another idea that's...
That's great. Cool. It sounds like you have an awesome team over there.
Oh, we do, man. It's great. You're only as good as your team, and we have some great people, man. Can't do it alone.
Yeah, everyone that I've met over there has been fantastic, super personable, really easy to kind of talk to and stuff while you're sitting at a bar.
That's the way it should be, right?
Right.
That's how it all starts.
Exactly.
Spread the love.
Good.
All right. Well, we won't monopolize too much more of your time here. And thank you so much for coming on. I greatly appreciate it.
That hour went very, very quick, man.
Yeah, it speeds on by.
Yes, it does.
But yes, thank you again, Brian, for coming
on. Pleasure to meet you, man.
It was a blast. Sorry it took so long to get you on here.
No, that was my fault. I'm sorry. Duty calls.
Yes.
I understand. Yeah, you have important things to do.
But for those who want to support us, I am being a Slack person. Just found out that you can give us a 5-star review on Spotify. So yeah, just hit the 3 little dots, or if you have a real phone, an Android, it just pops up automatically. You can vote for us and give us a 5-star review.
Appreciate
if you don't
that.
Want to give us 5 stars, that's cool. Just don't leave us a review then.
I'll give you 5 stars.
Thank you.
But yeah, I think that's about it for us. You'll hear us on the next one.
Yeah. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Cheers.